Hello, I'm Matthew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 17th of June, 2026.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Matthew, Angela, Peter, Muhammad, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we find out what's been happening at Beacon with the latest update from Helen and Muhammad. There's all the latest news from across the Black Country, including news on how you can help shape the future accessibility of the NHS app and digital eye care services. We take a journey around a local area of more than 420 million years of historical significance. Can you guess where and what this fossilised area of outstanding geological heritage may be? Are some spells of summer sunshine on their way? We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. With higher UV levels expected across the region over the next few days, we also have a feature segment focusing on what UV radiation emitted by the sun is and how it can be dangerous for our eyes. And with thanks to the Talking News Federation, we hear from Soundings contributor Lindsay, who brings us the history of World Music Day, marked each year on the 21st of June. Local news to start, though, with me, Matthew, Angela, and Peter.
The NHS's first fully digital trust has been formally established, with glaucoma, cataracts and medical retina conditions confirmed as being amongst the first conditions covered. The first of its kind trust was established on Monday the 1st of June, and online NHS Trust will see conditions where evidence already shows digital care works well and current waiting times are long, its website said. The online NHS Trust, which was announced by Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer during his speech at the 2025 Labour Party conference, will start seeing patients in England from late 2027. The Trust will utilise referral based on an initial primary care assessment, aiming to connect patients with specialists wherever they are in the country, after an appointment with a GP or other provider. Care will be available via the NHS app and through video consultations, with in-person tests and procedures being booked with local providers. The government hopes that the online NHS Trust will help to reduce waiting times, improve access to care across England, and make it easier for people to access NHS services. Suitable patients will be able to access online consultations, get advice on managing conditions, access digital prescriptions, and book tests, treatments, and procedures via the app. Clinicians will be able to triage patients and review their notes remotely, potentially outside office hours, without the patient needing to be present, online NHS Trust said. It is hoped that the Trust will carry out 8.5 million appointments within its first 3 years. Existing NHS staff will be given the opportunity to work for NHS Online Trust alongside their usual job, NHS England said. OT is seeking confirmation on whether primary care optometrists will also have the opportunity to offer initial consultations as part of the new trust. A survey of nearly 300 consultants and specialist doctors carried out by NHS England found that 48% would be willing to offer at least 4 hours a week of their time to work for the trust. The opportunity to care for patients innovatively, to work flexibly, and to improve patient experience were among the top reasons that practitioners gave for wanting to sign up. James Murray, MP, the Health Secretary, said that online NHS Trust will bring the NHS into digital age and in line with the technology people use every day. By cutting waiting lists and connecting people to experts from the comfort of their own homes, NHS Online is going to make a real, tangible difference to patients and represents a major step in building a health service fit for the future, Murray said.
And staying with digital healthcare services, the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Eye Health and Visual Impairment is conducting a survey on the accessibility of the NHS app and digital eye care. The results of the survey will inform a position summary and recommendations by the All-Party Parliamentary Group, APPG, for Eye Health and Visual Impairment. An introduction to the questionnaire states, "This survey focuses particularly on the NHS app and how it could better support visually impaired people. Findings will be used to identify key barriers and opportunities for improving digital inclusion in eye care and to inform the APP's recommendations." The APPG is seeking responses from blind and visually impaired people, clinicians, accessibility specialists, advocacy groups, and NHS policymakers. Topics covered within the survey include how visually impaired people currently navigate digital eye care and where digital eye care services could be made more accessible. While themes, examples, or evidence provided as part of the survey may be included in the APPG's position paper, the APPG will not refer to named individuals. Those interested in completing the survey can do so through Microsoft Forms. The survey is also available in accessible formats on request. To receive a copy and/or link to the survey, please contact the Secretariat of the APPG via email on appgehvi@plmr.co.uk. The survey will close on the 3rd of July at 5 p.m. And just a note, should you require any further information, guidance or assistance, setting up and or using a digital service such as the NHS app, please contact Beacon on 01902 880 111 and request to speak with the Digital, IT and Accessibility Support Service.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mo from Beacon, and here's your latest update from across the charity. There's been plenty happening over the last week, so let's get started. First of all, a quick update about our Blockswitch charity shop. Unfortunately, due to the heavy rain, we had to close our charity shop on Friday the 12th of June due to damage, and while essential repairs are being carried out, we know this caused some inconvenience for our customers and our supporters, and we'd like to say a big thank you to everyone for their patience and understanding while the work is taking place. We're hoping to have everything back up and running very soon, and hopefully on Tuesday. We appreciate your continued support. Now onto something much brighter. Last week we were delighted to attend the Me Festival at Hindley Hall, where Beacon spent the day helping children and families learn more about sight loss and accessibility through a range of fun, interactive activities. Children had the chance to experience different eye conditions using simulation glasses, take part in color contrast challenges, explore objects through touch, and even put their listening skills to the test with some engaging games. It was wonderful to see so many young people getting involved, asking lots of questions, and building a better understanding of sight loss in such a positive and enjoyable way. A huge thank you to everyone who helped organize such an inspiring event, and to everyone who stopped by to say hello and take part. Looking ahead now, if you enjoy live music, we've got a real treat for you. With a wonderful afternoon coming up at the Lifestyle Centre on Tuesday, the 23rd of June, from 1:30, we'll be welcoming Richard Harvey, the talented pianist from the Black Country Living Museum. Richard has kindly volunteered his time to perform a special recital featuring well-loved music from across the years, taking everyone through a musical journey through the ages. Whether you're a music lover or simply fancy an enjoyable afternoon out, everyone is welcome, but places are limited. So please book in advance by calling us on 01902-880111. And finally this week, here's a look ahead at what's coming up in this week's community activities at Beacon. On Monday, there's a supported tandem bike ride and also friendly indoor bowl session in the Beacon Gym. Tuesday brings gardening club, where members can spend time at the allotments learning new skills, enjoying the fresh air, and catching up with friends. On Wednesday, there is another of our popular fishing sessions, suitable for both experienced anglers and anyone wanting to give fishing a go for the very first time. Thursday sees a visit to Sedgley Adventure Centre for a relaxing day out and a chance to spend time together. And Friday, we have 10-pin bowling, where everyone is welcome. Whether you're hoping for a strike or just looking forward to a good laugh and some great company. As always, all of our activities are fully supported by the Beacon team and volunteers to make sure everyone feels welcome, included, and able to take part in the activities. If you'd like to find out more or book your place today, just give us a call on 01902-880111, or you can email inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's all from me for this week. Thanks for listening. Take care, and I'll speak to you again next week, where we'll have even more exciting updates from across our Beacon family.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
A local historian shone the spotlight on the history of Wolverhampton Wanderers last weekend, just one of a series of heritage-themed events taking place at Central Library over the coming months. Kevin Harris's illustrated presentation, held at the Central Library on Saturday, looked at the Molyneux family and the club's foundation in 1877, as it approaches its 150th anniversary. Kevin will also be leading a taster session for his regular Blue Plaque Walk from the library on Thursday, the 2nd of July, sharing the stories of the famous faces associated with buildings in Wolverhampton city centre. The taster event has proved very popular and is already fully booked, but Kevin runs regular walks in return for a donation of £10 per person towards various projects he is working on, including new gravestones or the repairs of graves of Wolves founders and players. If you are interested in attending these future walks, please email kevinandiris28@gmail.com for further details. Meanwhile, staff are preparing for Heritage Open Day tours on Thursday, the 17th of September, giving people the chance to see behind the scenes of the iconic Central Library, the only Grade 2 listed Carnegie Library in the country. Visitors will be invited to explore its historic rooms and hidden corners and uncover the stories that have shaped it for more than a century. Along the way, people will be able to experience glimpses of the building's everyday life, from the people who keep it running to the collections, quirks, and routines that make the library an essential part of daily life in Wolverhampton. And there will also be a history walk with Quinton Watt taking place on Remembrance Day on Wednesday, the 11th of November. Wolverhampton's Great War Railway Men, a war walk, will commemorate railway workers and their contribution to the war effort. At the time of the Great War, three railway companies operated in Wolverhampton: the Great Western Railway, the London and North Western Railway, and the Midland Railway. Employees from each enlisted, and roughly 11% of them never came home, while nationally, about 21,500 railway men died in the war. The War Walk will visit places where 16 of these Wolverhampton men lived, worked, or are commemorated, and recount their stories and the parts they played in the war to end all wars. Places for the Heritage Open Days tour and War Walk will be available for booking nearer the time. Councillor Jessima Howell, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Governance and Digital, said, "Our libraries are about so much more than books. They are vibrant spaces where our city's stories come to life. Central Library has an exciting program of events in the coming months, offering residents and visitors a wonderful opportunity to explore Wolverhampton's rich history, discover hidden stories, and connect with the people who have shaped our city. It is free to join Wolverhampton's libraries. To find out more, please visit libraries. Call 01902 552 025 or follow the library service on social media at Facebook, Instagram, and X."
From forthcoming History and Blue Plaque Walks to a Wolverhampton walking group that marked its 25th anniversary with a special event at Bantock Park this week. Ramblers Wellbeing Walks Wolverhampton was established in 2021, having formerly been known as Walking for Health, which started in 2001. It currently offers over a dozen free walks around the city every week, especially suited for people who may not currently walk very often, but want to get healthier, fitter, and to make new friends. The programme includes West Park Walk, meet inside Devon Road entrance at 10:15 a.m. every weekday. East Park Walk, meet by the new children's play area at 10:15 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Bantock Park Walk, meet near the car park at 10:15 a.m. every Tuesday. Heath Town Park Walk, meet at Bushby Road opposite Holy Trinity Church at 11:45 a.m. every Tuesday. Smetstone Nature Valley Walk, meet at Windmill Community Church at 10 a.m. every Thursday. Northwood Park Walk, meet at Presbury Medical Practice in Broadway at 11:45 a.m. every Thursday. Boundary Way Walk, meet at the Boundary Way Allotments at 10:15 a.m. every Friday. And lastly, Penderford Walk, meet at Oasis Community Cafe at 10:15 a.m. every Friday. The walks vary from half an hour to an hour and a half, depending on location. To join, simply turn up on the day. For more details, contact Naileen Patel, Volunteer Scheme Coordinator, on 07881 742 959 or via email at naileenpatel1ccc@gmail.com. Well, to mark its 25th anniversary, the group held a special commemorative walk around Bantock Park on Tuesday morning, followed by a celebration event with refreshments. Naileen said, We were overwhelmed with the turnout, with over 70 walkers, along with former and current walk leaders, and Will Heckford, programme lead for the Ramblers, who said it was an absolute honour to be there. I'd like to say a huge thanks to all of our dedicated walk leaders who give up their valuable time to lead safe walks on people's doorsteps across Wolverhampton. And it was heartwarming to hear the effect that walking is having on our members. And Councillor Abaidu Ahmed, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, added, "Walking is not just an excellent social activity, but also brings with it a huge number of health benefits. It helps lower blood pressure and reduce the risk of heart disease. It strengthens bones and muscles. It improves balance and coordination, and it can help maintain a healthy weight. Evidence also suggests that just a 20-minute walk per day helps prevent and manage chronic illnesses and can also help prevent dementia."
From the brisk leisurely walks around our Black Country parks, we, boldly and confident with chest puffed out, walk slowly to a Staffordshire village now. Church Eaton may be best known for its picturesque setting, historic church and strong community spirit, but one resident has become almost as famous as the village itself. Percy the Peacock, a colourful visitor who arrived around 5 years ago and never left, has firmly established himself as Church Eaton's most recognisable character. By day, he can often be spotted wandering the high street as if keeping an eye on proceedings, occasionally pausing to inspect gardens, watch passing traffic, or greet bemused visitors. As evening falls, he heads off to roost nearby before beginning his rounds again the next morning. Over the years, Percy has become something of a local celebrity. Residents regularly share photographs of his latest appearances, while visitors often leave with stories of unexpectedly encountering a peacock strolling through the heart of a Staffordshire village. His popularity has even earned him a place on social media. A recent post from the Royal Oak in Church Eaton featured Percy alongside the simple greeting, "Morning," with the pub joking that he is becoming quite the regular as he patiently waits outside. Although peacocks are more commonly associated with stately homes and country estates, Percy seems perfectly at ease with village life. Whether perched on a wall, wandering between cottages, or displaying his striking plumage in the sunshine, he attracts attention wherever he goes. For many villagers, Percy embodies the charm and individuality that makes Church Eaton special. In an age when rural communities can sometimes struggle to retain their distinct character, the village's feathered ambassador offers a reminder that the most memorable places are often those with a story to tell. And in Church Eaton, few stories are told more often than those involving Percy the Peacock, the unexpected resident who arrived, stayed, and quietly became a local legend. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. How many varieties of tea are there? Question 2. What is the flavouring in Earl Grey tea? Question 3. What was the name of the Duchess who is said to have invented afternoon tea? Question 4. About how much plastic may be in a tea bag? Question 5. How many cups of tea are drunk each day in the UK? And finally, question 6. What is the Cornish whey with jam and cream on a scone? I will be back with you later with the answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. A new piece of art created by young prisoners to raise awareness of knife crime and youth violence has been unveiled at a Wolverhampton prison. The Phoenix sculpture, which also carries poems and writings across its body, was officially unveiled at HMP and YOI Prison Brinsford on Wednesday, June the 10th, as the latest part of Project Ray of Hope, a major youth violence prevention initiative in the West Midlands. Project Ray of Hope is led by the James Brindley Foundation, set up after the 26-year-old fitness instructor was fatally stabbed in Aldridge in 2017, and was established with backing from the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner to tackle the root cause of antisocial behaviour and knife crime. The sculpture was created by inmates at Brinsford under the tutelage of artist Luke Perry, a creator of many notable sculptures and artworks across the Black Country, and is the centrepiece of a full garden area. Mr. Perry said he had worked with the young prisoners and asked them to work out what they wanted to do, with the Phoenix statue chosen as a way to represent rebirth and the hope that changes can be made when they come out of prison. He told the Express and Star, "I approached the prison because I thought it would be a good place to start with the target audience, as if you want to start the way people think about your youth violence, then talk about it with people who have been involved in this." Mark Brindley, James Brindley's father, commissioned me to make the big artwork, and he has been completely supportive of the decision to come here, because it's ground zero for where you want to be tackling the problem. "The people who have made this seem to be kind, gentle and thoughtful people, and the things they have done are not in line with what they are. So they've needed to step away from that, and this has been part of their recuperation." The unveiling of the Phoenix was also a chance for Mark Brindley, founder of the James Brindley Foundation, to take a first look at the statue. He said, "It's very impressive and a great monument to a change in young people's lives. I love the symbolism of a phoenix and an expectation of a new life, and the engagement that the young people have shown in producing this is fantastic. For them, rehabilitation is key and should be thorough enough and important enough for them to make a new life without resorting to criminality. I do hope it can inspire people, as it shows that the prison is forward-thinking and really putting substance behind rehabilitation and engagement. And this is on the back of Project Ray of Hope, which was off the Knife Angel coming to Warsaw, and how I decided that Warsaw needed to have a symbol of its own." The Phoenix statue stands on the site of a fully restored area on the prison grounds, with a large garden surrounding the statue, as well as a falconry and bird area at the back. The governor of the prison, Darren Hudson, said the sculpture showed the work to help rehabilitate the young people in the prison. He said, "As the governor, it's easy when I've got good staff who are dedicated to make a change. This came from the staff, and the vision has grown to where we now have the garden, and we had the idea to try and grow more awareness about the danger of knife crime." When I first saw it, I said, wow, as it all come together and it's now a massive focal point in the prison and means for years to come, we can bring more awareness about life crime. It's called A Fearless Phoenix for a reason, as this is about lads at their lowest ebb when they're in custody to make the changes to their lives going forward, as it's all about education. The project had also been a source of pride for the inmates taking part in it, with one saying it had been introduced as a competition with other prisons and had helped them to learn new creative skills. He said, "The instructors told us about the idea and they put their foot forward and told us what we've got to do. I am quite proud of us all, myself and my team, and it's been nice to see the progression from where we started to what it's become. When I first started, I had no experience of anything like this, but now I feel like I really enjoyed it and it was a fun thing to do."
And staying with the creative arts, more than 420 million years of geological history in the West Midlands is being explored by an artist as part of a gallery residency. Stuart Whipps, who makes photography, films and installations, is examining the area which stretches across Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton. The site was designated a UNESCO Global Geopark in 2020, recognising it as an area of outstanding geological heritage. Known for its remarkable fossils, diverse landscapes and mineral wealth, the Black Country played a crucial role in discovery and innovation during the Industrial Revolution, Whip said. "Geology may sound a bit impersonal," he added, "but I'm really interested in the personal stories that are bound up in the area. In the Midlands in particular, the stories of working class people within the history of geology are often overlooked. They were the ones mining the land, identifying and collecting fossils. But they were often written out of those histories, and often it was the geologists in labs who were credited with these discoveries." During his residency at the New Art Gallery in Walsall, Whipps will visit sites across the area including Bar Beacon, Brown Hills Mining Heritage Monument, Hayhead Wood, and Walsall Arboretum, meeting locals and gathering material to bring back to the studio. The Birmingham artist said he had been developing performance lectures using an analogue slide projector and objects to tell stories about places. "The Black Country was a place of real international significance," he added, "although people don't often think of it in that way." He said he hoped his work would encourage people to think of the area in different ways. "The idea that there's billions of years of accumulated material under your feet that means something changes the way we think about time and place," he said. The artist's studio event and project entitled The Formation of the Universe runs until the 5th of July, with a public event held on the 4th of July.
So, where and what exactly is this historically significant and fossilised area of outstanding geological heritage? Well, Express and Star reporter Dan Stacey went searching, and this is what he found. Most towns have a local mascot. Dudley has one that might just be the oldest in the world. Known affectionately as the Dudley Bug, the fossilised trilobite has become a symbol of the town's rich geological heritage, appearing on everything from souvenirs to the borough's coat of arms. However, while plenty of people recognise its distinctive shape, fewer know that you can still go looking for one yourself. And that is exactly what I set out to do at Wren's Nest National Nature Reserve. Most nature reserves offer visitors a chance to spot wildlife, enjoy a scenic walk, or escape the bustle of everyday life. At Wren's Nest, however, visitors can do something far more unusual. Search for fossils from a tropical sea that existed more than 420 million years ago. The former limestone quarry is one of Britain's most important fossil sites, and long before the Black Country became known for mines, furnaces and factories, this landscape sat beneath a warm tropical sea teeming with life. Today, that ancient seabed is exposed in the reserve's rocky slopes and quarry faces, preserving a snapshot of a world that existed hundreds of millions of years before dinosaurs ever walked the earth. And somewhere amongst those rocks, I hoped to find a deadly bug. Whether it is a complete specimen or just part of one, spotting a deadly bug is like uncovering buried treasure. It's easy to see why Victorian quarrymen became fascinated by them. During the height of limestone extraction activity in the area, trilobite fossils were found so frequently that the creatures became synonymous with the town itself. In fact, the dudley bug isn't actually a bug at all. It was a marine arthropod that crawled across the floor of an ancient ocean more than 420 million years ago. The species found at Wren's Nest, Calimini blumenbachii, became one of the most famous fossils in Britain and helped to put Dudley on the geological map. And what makes the experience so special that these are not museum exhibits hidden behind glass, they are real fossils, waiting to be discovered in the very rocks where they were formed. Visitors should remember that the Wren's Nest is a protected national nature reserve. Fossils can be collected from loose material on the ground, but hammering rocks or quarry faces is strictly forbidden to preserve the site for future generations. As I left the reserve, one thing became clear. Wren's Nest is more than just a nature reserve or a geological site. It is one of the few places in the country where anyone can experience the thrill of discovering a creature that lived hundreds of millions of years ago. And if you are lucky, you might even find the fossil that made Dudley famous.
Next, let's have another beacon update.
Blind and partially sighted people across the Black Country and South Staffordshire have helped shape our communities for generations. Now there is an opportunity to make sure these stories are recorded and remembered. With support from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, Beacon is leading a new project to preserve and celebrate the history of people with sight loss in our area. This includes recording personal experiences, everyday lives, achievements, and the changes people have seen over time. Your experience is part of this history. By taking part, you will help make sure the voices of visually impaired people are recorded, recognised and shared for generations. Working with Wolverhampton City Archives, the project will also improve access to heritage for people with sight loss. Email inquiries at beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111 to get involved.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, the World Cup is with us again, and it's like Marmite, isn't it? Some love it and some hate it. But there are two things that are a sure sign of British summer. One is Wimbledon, and the other is cricket. And I don't think that either would be complete without strawberries and cream and the break for tea in a cricket match. How very English. Now, did you know that? There are over 3,000 varieties of tea, but one of the most famous is Earl Grey tea, a black tea flavoured with oil of bergamot. There are numerous theories of how the tea was so named and by whom, but in the early 19th century, oil of bergamot was used to enhance the flavour of poor-tasting teas. And it's the 7th Duchess of Bedford, Anna Maria Russell, who we have to thank for the invention of afternoon tea. Sometime around 1840, she was one of Queen Victoria's ladies-in-waiting, who became so despondent at the void between lunch and dinner, she requested that some tea, bread and butter and cake was brought to her room in the late afternoon. And with that one request of a lady's grumbling stomach, an afternoon ritual was born. The vast majority of tea bags in the UK are made from natural plant fibres. It is true to say that some of these tea bags contain a very small amount of plastic, just about 1%. This enables their edges to be heat sealed and stops them falling apart in hot water. And of course, now that all councils collect our food waste, you can place whole tea bags in the appropriate bin. If you would like to put tea in your garden compost instead, then it's best to rip open the bags before placing the spent tea leaves in your compost heap and disposing of the tea bag paper separately in your bin. And here in the UK, it's estimated that we drink over 100 million cups each day. That's a staggering 36 billion cups each year. We are, however, nudged into second place because the Republic of Ireland hold this first position as per capita they drink the most. And what's afternoon tea without scones with jam and cream? The Devonshire way of eating scones is cream on first, followed by jam. With a Cornish cream tea, it's jam first and cream on top. Quite a controversy and a sort of mush argument amongst aficionados of our great British tradition. Well, so there you have it, folks. Which way do you enjoy your scones? Personally, I couldn't care less. I just split my scone and do the bottom one in the Cornish way and the top one like in Devonian. Talk about sitting on the fence. Never mind, eh? They all go down the same way. Any road up, I'm off. I'm going to get my lunch, but this week is just a cheese and pickle butty. So I'll have to save myself for a cream tea until another day. But for now, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now, we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. And it's no surprise that unsettled spell of sunshine and showers is expected over the next few days. UV levels shall reflect this and shift from medium to high throughout the week, with sunrise and sunset times as follows: 4:45 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:35 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, Friday 19th of June is set for plenty of rain showers setting in across the region, with a moderate southwesterly breeze still drifting in warmer air. Temperatures shall still remain high enough to keep things feeling a little muggy at 25 degrees. Moving into the weekend, and the unsettled weather shall shift to something a little more favourable, with longer spells of sunshine expected, and Sunday bringing with it a day of unbroken sunshine with slightly cooler air pushing in from the west. Temperatures shall drop a touch, with highs of 23 degrees across the region. And this is how it shall remain as we move into Monday and further into next week, with sunny spells throughout the day and light rain moving in over the late evening. A gentle westerly breeze shall continue to keep temperatures settled and pleasant at 23 degrees, with Tuesday 23rd looking like it will be very much like Sunday and a clear day of blue skies and glorious unbroken sunshine. So, there we have it. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Thanks for the weather forecast, Mina. With high UV levels expected across the region over the next few days, it sounds like we may be experiencing some spells of sunshine, similar to those of a few weeks ago, where during the May heatwave, UV levels were unusually high across much of the UK for that time of year. Some exposure to UV is essential for our well-being, but too much is damaging and can cause skin cancer. What is UV? and why can it be dangerous? Ultraviolet radiation is emitted by the sun and penetrates the Earth's atmosphere. It enables our skin to produce essential vitamin D, which is important for the function of bones, blood cells, and our immune system. But too much UV can be harmful. It can lead to skin cancer by damaging DNA in skin cells. UV also plays a substantial role in skin aging, contributing to wrinkles and loosened folds. It has also been linked to eye problems. So, how can UV radiation emitted by the sun affect your eyes? You can't see UV, but its damaging effects can stay with you for life. In fact, eyes are 10 times more sensitive to UV than skin. Most of us are aware that we should protect our skin against ultraviolet rays by using sun cream and covering up. But do you ever consider what UV can do to our eyes? Many of us wear sunglasses as a practicality to reduce the glare of the sun, or even to look cool. But there is a more serious reason for wearing shades. UV radiation from the sun can have both short and long-term effects on the condition of our eyes. It can burn the surface, cornea, and lens of the eye, much like sun can burn skin. Long-term exposure to UV radiation can be serious. For instance, exposure to UV significantly increases the risk of developing cataracts, a clouding of the eye lens, and the leading cause of blindness in the world.
According to the Eye Care Trust, our eyes are 10 times more sensitive to UV light than our skin. But children's eyes face an even greater risk of UV damage. Big pupils and clearer lenses means that 70% more UV light can reach the retina of a child. The World Health Organization estimates that this lack of natural eye protection, combined with the amount of time children spend playing outdoors, could mean that as much as 80% of a lifetime's UV is absorbed into the eye by the time a child reaches the age of 18. In the UK, cumulative exposure to UV is one of the main causes of age-related macular degeneration and cataracts, the leading cause of sight loss that affects one in three people aged over 65 years. Parents need to ensure that they protect their children's eyes from the sun, or they're putting them at risk of permanent damage to their sight in the future. Looking after your eyes. To protect your eyes from UV exposure, it is important to wear good quality UV protective sunglasses that block out 99 to 100% of both UVA and UVB radiation, and that screens 75 to 90% of visible light. Wraparound sunglasses offer the best protection, while grey lenses give proper colour recognition. And to protect your eyes further, you should also seek shade during the middle of the day between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m, when UV penetration is at its strongest. The UV index, the strength of the sun, can be high at many times of the year. And it's worth remembering that it doesn't have to be hot and the sky doesn't have to be cloudless for UV levels to be high. We grade the UV levels from low to very high, and it's important to take action when UV levels are moderate or above. Moderate. Take care during midday hours and do not spend too much time in the sun unprotected. High. Seek shade during midday hours, cover up and wear sunscreen. Very high. Spend time in the shade between 11 and 3. Shirt, sunscreen and hat essential. To get UV forecasts for UK, all you have to do is simply go to the Met Office website or download the free Met Office app. The UV forecast shows the UV index for the next 7 days and an hour-by-hour forecast for the next 2 days. For iPhone, the app is available from the App Store. For Android, the app is available from the Google Play Store.
Latest research. We undertook some research to find out what people know about UV and its effects, and the actions they take when UV levels are high. A huge surprise was that almost one-third of people don't know that the sun is our main source of UV, and yet half of people know UV comes from sunbeds. While 41% of adults worry about UV being a cause of skin cancer, only 22% worry about the effects of UV on their eyes, despite UV being much more damaging to the eyes than to skin. Many people underestimate the effects of UV. For instance, 1/4 of people think UV is only harmful when the sky is clear. 1 in 3 people do not realize that eyes can get burnt by UV. 1/4 of UK adults believe that UV light is not harmful after 3 p.m. And 27% believe in that if it's cold outside, then there is no need to worry about UV. UV awareness. One thing that most people did get right is that UV is more damaging to children than adults, with 6 out of 10 people answering this correctly. However, almost half of people thought that UV damage was reversible, which it isn't. And almost half felt that the darker the lens, the more protection sunglasses offered, which is also not true. In terms of protecting against UV, just under half of people didn't know whether their sunglasses offered UV protection. 3/4 of parents weren't aware that there was any such thing as a UV forecast. Meanwhile, only 1/4 of parents would take protective action when the UV level is moderate, even though this is the level at which the NHS suggests people should take action. UV awareness is generally growing, but this has largely been limited to the effects of UV on skin, and how this can lead to skin cancer. Now, we hope to shine the spotlight on the effects of UV on eyes, and especially children, thereby helping to protect the eyesight of a generation. Please do take care. And remember, if you are out and about, to take the necessary precautions to protect yourselves from the sun. Should you need any further guidance or support with how best to protect your eyes, and or wish to arrange a demonstration of some wraparound filter glasses, you can contact Pete, Sat, and Cushy, Beacon's team of sight loss advisors, on 01902 880 111.
Next up, we have another block of local news. The Howes Owen Carnival and Music Festival returns on July the 4th, bringing live music, family entertainment, stalls, food, a fun fair, wrestling arena and more, all free to attend. The event once again opens the Black Country Festival, kicking off a month of celebrations across the region. This year's carnival is proudly sponsored by Howes Owen Motorhouse, who said, "Organised entirely by volunteers, the carnival has grown into one of the area's biggest community events." Stuart Henley says, "As chairman, I want to thank everyone who supports us each year. Your enthusiasm keeps this event alive." The community comes alive as thousands enjoy the Howes Owen Carnival and Music Festival. Free parking will be available across Howes Owen Town Centre in partnership with Dudley Council. We look forward to welcoming families, residents and visitors for a fantastic day celebrating Howes Owen and the Black Country. Now then, before we get grooving and moving our feet in time with the carnival beat, did you know that World Music Day is marked each year on the 21st of June? With thanks to TNF Soundings contributor Lindsay, we can now learn all about the story behind World Music Day. The recording includes a short clip of medieval music called "Summer Is Uncoming In," performed by Hilary James and Simon Mayer for Acoustic Records, who have given permission for the Talking News to use the music clip free of copyright.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I call them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about World Music Day. This annual celebration, held on the 21st of June, taps into the universal language of music and widespread appeal in all its forms. World Music Day began with the City event in 1982, originating in Paris, France, known as Fête de la Musique, bringing musicians, street performers, concerts, and music lovers together to share this remarkable human talent of expressing emotions and physical skills in a multitude of different ways. Due to the attraction's enormous popularity, the EU made it officially a cultural event. Today, musical venues and historical museums provide public accessible music in around 100 countries. Theories of what constitutes music range from melody with vocal sounds from the Stone Age onwards, through to natural-made instruments using materials like rocks, gourds, animal skins, wood, metal, bone, etc. Of course, singing needs no music accompaniment and is perceived as helping social groups to develop communication and maintain close-knit communities. Since 5000 BC, Egyptian priest physicians were using music for healing purposes, along with tribal shamans, religious orders, and the Greek father of medicine, Hippocrates, credited for the doctor's Hippocratic Oath, was playing music to his patients back in 400 BC. The British Association for Music Therapy believes there are wider healing effects of sound in psychological clinical intervention, assisting those with verbal communication difficulties and improving baby and parent bonding. At the opposite end of the age range, music is helping the elderly cope with dementia and feelings of isolation. Even the trend for sound bathing uses metal gongs, one of the most ancient designed instruments, originating from rock gongs, natural stones which resonate sound when struck. There is one fine example of a shaped edge rock gong found on an archaeological dig in Sudan, Africa, and donated to the British Museum. Social media too has many examples of diverse and experimental rhythmic sound, such as improvising with hitting hollow tubes, known as boom whackers, and substituting drums with pots, dustbins, or oil drums. Woodwind flutes were next on the evolution scale, with hand-carved flutes made of bone or mammoth tusks ivory, discovered on further archaeological digs in Slovenia and Germany, dating to over 35,000 years ago. Interestingly, cave paintings in southwestern France depict a string bow being used by a tribal medicine person, subsequently found to be played by American tribes and current San tribal people of the Kalahari Desert, Africa, who actually convert their hunting longbows for musical use. Later evidence in the Indian subcontinent produced the multi-stringed instruments of the lyre and the harp, which led eventually to the harpsichord and, of course, the well-known modern piano. In 1971, the BBC TV Christmas show of Morecambe and Wise included a comedy sketch of Grieg's piano concerto with André Previn conducting the orchestra and Eric Morecambe at the soloist's piano making a terrible din, whereby Previn cannot resist pointing out that Eric is playing all the wrong notes, to which he replies to the world-famous conductor, "I'm playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order." Although the premise is funny, it does highlight the fact that music can be a very subjective art form and not always rigidly structured. Take, for example, the somewhat random but tuneful style, jazz. However, going back to the basics of vocal arrangements can still encapsulate the essence of harmony. The polyphonic pieces, polyphonic meaning many sounds or voices, mostly began as folk songs and is unique to each region of England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland. The oldest known British song is from the mid-13th century, written on a manuscript found in Reading Abbey, Berkshire, titled Suma is a Cumin Inn, and sung not only in the original Wessex dialect, but in a medieval polyphonic round of six parts. Recorded these days by interpretive musicians, it still retains the sentiment of summer arriving as the cuckoo song. Here, by kind permission of Simon Mayer and Hilary James through acousticsrecords.co.uk, is an extract of their own version of Suma is a Cumin' Inn.
Suma is a Cumin' Inn. Suma is a Cumin' Inn. Suma is a Cumin' Inn.
Records, these are some Guinness World Records relating to British music achievements. In 2014, the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester had the greatest number of people playing a single piano simultaneously, managing to get 16 pianists around the keyboard. Unfortunately, this world record was subsequently broken by a group of Cypriot classical pianists with 25 playing in 2023. On a much grander scale, in 2013, Foghorns were decommissioned across the UK. To mark this historic event, a piece of music was written by Lise Autogina and Joshua Portway with composer Orlando Goff. They gathered three brass bands on the coast, 55 ships on the North Sea, and operated the Salter Lighthouse, Foghorn, for the very last time, to perform their Foghorn Requiem live in Sunderland, northeast England. A musical piece made all the more difficult as it needed the conductor to coordinate bands, computer-controlled GPS to each ship, and factor in sound time delays because they were several miles distance from the lighthouse, while still delivering the best performance for audiences on the clifftops. May you enjoy the beauty and benefits of music, whatever the style.
TNF Soundings.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. How many varieties of tea are there? And the answer is 3,000. Question 2. What is the flavouring in Earl Grey tea? And the answer is oil of bergamot. Question 3. What was the name of the Duchess who is said to have invented afternoon tea? And the name is Anna Marie Russell. Question 4. About how much plastic may be in a tea bag? And the answer? Around 1%. Question 5. Question 5. How many cups of tea are drunk each day in the UK? And the answer? 100 million. And finally, question 6. What is the Cornish way with jam and cream on a scone? And the answer? Jam first and cream on top. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!